Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
This edition of Nature Now has been recorded entirely by phone in response to the continuing health and safety issues we must all now face. Here at KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, we always strive to bring you the best available content, and we appreciate you, our listeners. Now, on with the show.
Hello, this is Mary Robson at Nature Now for the third week in March. When life has constricted by sheltering in place, the natural world that surrounds us is our sanctuary. We will have a couple of observations, and Christy Lassen from Wild Birds Unlimited in Gardner is here with me. Many of you have heard Christy speak before, and we always enjoy being together. Today we are going to go deep into the life of hummingbirds. Do you want to start with the first observation?
Sure. Survival by Degrees, a new book covers changes to bird life as temperatures change. As the climate warms, birds are forced to adapt by searching for suitable habitat and climate conditions elsewhere. When the places where they have lived, their ranges, shift, they may not adapt quickly enough to survive. The new Survival by Degrees publication from the National Audubon Society models with precision down to 1 kilometer how each bird species range will likely shift from climate change and other human impacts. The study takes advantage of 140 million observations by birders and scientists and 70 data sources, including the U.S. Geological Survey, eBird, and the North American Breeding Bird Survey. From the Olympic Peninsula Audubon newsletter, March through April, sadly, the times we are in mean that this year's Bird Fest for April 17th has been canceled.
Another thing that has been observed about birds is mourning doves at my feeder, and they are much more often heard than seen. They're uniformly gray with black feathers resembling spots on the wings, and they are determined eaters. They park themselves underneath a feeder. And in a tribute to the distancing we are now experiencing, Edward Abbey wrote this about doves. Also invisible, but invariably present at some indefinable distance, are the mourning dove, whose plaintive call suggests irresistibly a kind of seeking out, the attempt by separated souls to restore a lost communion. That's from Desert Solitaire. And we have a mystery sound. This one, you're going to be able to identify which category of creature it is. You won't have any trouble with that. But you may not know exactly what animal. Okay. Today we have Christy Lassen, who is a familiar and welcome guest. She is the owner with her husband, Mark, of Wild Birds Unlimited in Gardner. And it occurred to both of us that we have mentioned hummingbirds, not so that we want you to get tired of them, but today what we were going to do and are going to do is go much deeper into hummingbirds, things you might not know about them. And things that I learned about them while learning this. So on we go. Christy, let's start with the comment you made to me, which I really liked, that bird watching helps calm the nerves. And I can
definitely
think of a whole lot of jittery nerves right now.
There's been scientific studies that have shown that bird watching, being out in nature, is helpful for your physical health, that it reduces stress, it can lower your blood pressure. Just being around those calming aspects of nature is really good for all of us. And I think that now those things are more than ever important, to have a little sense of peace, to have some calmness in our lives. And while everyone is doing a little bit of self-quarantining, bird watching is a great activity, a great way to spend the day.
Well, I moved out my feeders from the woods where they were to the edge of the garden. And that means that when I sit in a chair in my living room, I'm looking down on what the birds are doing. It's been pretty wonderful.
Definitely.
So let's start up with hummingbirds. There are a lot of physical things about them that people might not know, starting with what they do with their feet.
So they can't walk. Hummingbirds don't have the ability to walk or hop. So their feet can be used to scoot them sideways, like along branches or even along the ground if they're chasing little bugs and things like that. They can scoot sideways. These birds, the hummingbirds, have evolved smaller feet to be lighter and more efficient at flying. And they'll use their feet for itching and preening, though, too. And if you've ever seen a hummingbird stick a foot up and scratch its head, it's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen.
But it is unusual because we look at the feet on birds and figure that most of them can walk. And a lot of people think when they look at the beak on a hummingbird that it is using that beak to get food, but it doesn't use the beak for food. It uses a very unusual long tongue.
Definitely, yep. The hummingbird's tongue is the length of their bill. And then at the base of their mouth, that tongue splits and it wraps around their eye sockets. So their tongue almost twice the length of their bill. And their tongue, too, is actually, it's split. And so when they put their tongue into the nectar, the split tongue closes, and then through a capillary action, they draw that nectar into their mouth. It's really very, very interesting.
Well, and these birds are miraculously contrived, given their size.
Definitely. There's a lot of life in those little bodies.
Well, and when you watch a hummingbird, the males, I've got two male Annas who do not like each other. Their throat color is not a red feather, it's the way the light hits it, right?
It's caused, the colors in their of their feathers are not caused by pigmentation, but it's rather by the iridescent and the arrangement of the feathers. All kinds of things affect the way that we see the hummingbirds and the colors on them. It's interesting to see like an Anna's and hummingbird sitting on a feeder or in a tree or bush, and they turn their head and their head almost looks black, and then they turn it back the other way and you see this magenta, brilliant magenta color, and that's because of the iridescence of the feathers and all kinds of things like moisture, the angle that you're looking at them, wear and tear on their feathers influence how bright and colorful they are.
This is a very small bird, so it has a rather small number of feathers. I don't know who has counted this, but
they say that they have between 1,000 and 1,500 feathers, which is the smallest amount of feathers of any species of bird in the world. They don't need that many feathers because they are so small, but also fewer feathers will keep better at flying.
And in watching them, we notice how incredibly fast their wings move, and they have a heart rate that is astonishing.
Theirs are 1,200 beats per minute.
For those of you who are curious, this is 1,200 beats per minute.
Yes. Wow. Well, and in order to do that, we can talk a little bit about what they eat. They simply can't stop eating because metabolically
they burn themselves out.
So they drink nectar from flowers and sometimes from feeders, but they are also insect eaters, and I think a lot of people don't imagine that.
The sugar water that they drink from flowers or from feeders is just the fuel that they use to go out and get the bugs that they need to survive. They are massive insectivores. They eat tons and tons of insects. It's interesting that the Annas stick around here because we're feeding them, but it's not. It's based off of the bug population. If those Annas find a supply of bugs that can support them through the winter, they stick around. And their main food source that they eat in the winter is spiders. And so we have tons and tons of spiders out here that their blood is like antifreeze. So they're active all winter long, and it's a huge resource for the hummingbirds.
You don't think about it, actually. We think of spider webs as being peculiar to one season, but indeed,
yes,
there are tons of them out here. And if anybody wants to find out more, the Burke Museum has a wonderful, wonderful spider site with lots of interviews and lots of things to learn. Okay, so we have said that they are licking this nectar, but they have to eat frequently.
I've always heard that hummingbirds can consume about an ounce of nectar a day. And so we always said that that's a great way to kind of gauge how many hummingbirds you have. If you have an 8-ounce feeder and you have to fill that thing up every day, you have at least 8 hummingbirds that are out there feeding on your feeder. So that's
wow,
what I've always heard.
Well, in the case of my feeder, I also have Chickadee, who come along and settle down and take some nectar from the feeder. It's very funny because they look completely out of place. Some of them apparently have decided that they ought to have dessert frequently, and they go by and use the feeder.
Well, I think, too, during nesting season, which we're rapidly approaching, you see that in other species of birds where they'll come up and try to get a little sip out of a hummingbird feeder. We've seen it in warblers. I've seen it with some of the grosbeaks, the chickadees at your feeder. I think it's that, you know, they're all expending so much energy this time of year, all of the birds. And so if they can find a quick, fast resource, they might take advantage of that too, if they can get in there and get a little bit.
We have here three species of hummingbirds, which is pretty amazing considering there aren't that many species that live in the United States.
Yes.
What is it, about eight that live?
Yes.
We have Rufus, which is amazing because of their migration. They don't stick around in the wintertime. They go to Mexico, but it's a long way.
They have the longest migration of any hummingbird species. The Rufus do. They fly more than 3,000 miles from their nesting grounds in Alaska and Canada to their winter habitat in Mexico.
So, this means that when we see them here, are they on the way to Alaska? They come by?
They do breed here, too.
Oh, okay.
We have a ton of breeding hummingbirds, but the Rufus hummingbird end up in Alaska. There are breeding Rufus hummingbirds in Alaska.
As being tropical, there are places in Arizona where you can go and check into a hotel and then watch hummingbird in big quantities. But I think it's just amazing that we're able to see them here the way we can.
Yep.
They sure aren't very heavy. I don't know how much the annas weigh. I know that you looked up the ruby throat. Not very heavy.
No, not at all. I think they said it weighs the same as a nickel. Oh, and
well,
it would
just
take
about
150 ruby throat hummingbirds to weigh 1 pound.
I don't think anybody's
A nickel weighs 4.5 grams.
When you have a nickel in your hand, it hardly registers. That is amazing.
Yeah.
We have eight species in the United States. I know people who have gardens in Maine and Connecticut and Ohio see ruby-throated hummingbird, which we never see.
No, they don't show up here. We get the annas year-round. Rufus are our migrators, and every now and then we have a Rufus who will stick around for the winter, but they're pretty few and far between. We see callipee hummingbirds as well, and then every now and then we see allans and black-chinned as well. So there are five species that, since I've lived here on the peninsula, I have seen each one of those. I've seen, you know, tons of annas and tons of the Rufus, seen callipees a few times. I have seen a black chin once and an allans once as well. Pretty amazing.
Callipee is the smallest hummingbird next to the bee hummingbird, right? It's not.
Yes.
I've seen it about one, and you
and
really
gorgeous.
Have to be looking.
They're gorgeous. They have long fingers of color that run down their throat. I mean, it's very, very striking. The annas have that striking magenta gorget,
yes,
what they call it, their neckerchief color. The callipee have like fingers of colors that run down their chest. They're just stunning.
Well, I will keep my eyes open. I'm just keeping my binoculars adjusted so I can pick them up and look quick. One of the things that they use their flight ability for is courting, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's definite flight patterns that happen with especially the annas for mating courtship. They also make sounds that are non-vocal sounds through flight. So they can push air through their feathers and actually make sounds, vocalizations, which is kind of amazing as well. That really strong sort of buzzing sound that the annas make, and they do it a lot during breeding season, is usually a sound that they're making with their feathers, not their voices. Pretty amazing.
Because some people sometimes think of hummingbirds as being rather soundless.
Ours are
certainly
they're squawk and they do a lot of
talking. Do. And in some instances they complain if the feeder is empty.
I was going to say our hummingbirds they know who my husband is in the garden. When the hummingbird feeders are empty, they find Mark in the garden and they buzz him and they get right in his face and they're kind of like, buddy, you know, hey, you with the thumb. He'll fill up the feeder. And they tell him what to do. And he does it because he loves his bird.
The annas, yes. I have seen this. They do a display while diving, right? They can go
definitely
up 50 feet or so, even more.
Yep.
And then they come down at an astonishing rate. And this is a mating,
a mating display. And it's a pattern that they fly in where they go up really high. They usually do a couple of loops and then zing right back down and then pull hard on the brakes in what they call like a J. A J-hook, sort of, you know, where they apply the brake
but
come up.
God, that is just so astonishing. And it's amazing when you see it because you think, oh, my gosh, something has gone askew with that bird. But it's just what they do. The male does not stick around. He doesn't stick around to raise the babies, however.
No, not at all. It's pretty much the females that run the show after mating is done. The females build the nest. They take care of the fledglings. They bring the babies food. They teach the babies how to feed themselves. They show them where the feeders are. And it's kind of an interesting thing, too, that learning to associate red with food is a learned behavior for the hummingbirds. They are not naturally, that's not part of their natural instincts. The mother teaches the babies to look for those colors for food sources.
You know, there's always something magical going on in the natural world, but a whole bunch of it is going on inside a hummingbird.
Definitely.
I have a nest, so I'm holding this little thing in my hand that I have no permit for, but it is astonishing to look at. And one of the things that is the most amazing about it is little bits of lichen are pasted all along the outside, which would camouflage the nest when it's in a tree. And
Definitely.
The other thing is they use spider silk to put the thing together.
Yes. That nest is stretchy, which is kind of amazing. And when the female lays the eggs, their eggs are just tiny. They're about the size of a raisin, the size of your little pinky fingernail. The nest is small enough to keep those pretty, you know, well compacted in the nest, and the mom can sit right on it. But as soon as the babies hatch out, the babies grow so rapidly that they need to be in a nest that actually stretches with them. And that's what the spider web allows. So the stretch, the
Amazing.
Nest will stretch with the babies.
I read about a zoo-like place that was keeping hummingbirds or raising hummingbirds, and they found the nests were falling apart all the time. And the reason it was a contained place, and what they discovered was that the nests did not hold together until they introduced spiders.
Yep.
And then the nests would hold together. We have just about time for one more amazing fact about hummingbirds, and that is their metabolic rate drops when they sleep. People have studied this with some astonishment. What's going on there?
So in order to conserve energy, hummingbirds do a thing that's called torpor. And it's mainly used by them when the weather is cold, in freezing temperatures. So hummingbirds can drop their metabolism. They lower that down, and they go into almost a semi-hibernative state. They can survive really cold weather this way. This is how the Annas get through our winters here, by doing torpor. They can consume up to 50 times less energy when in torpor than when they're awake, survive.
When they wake up, they're in danger unless they can find something to eat.
They use so much energy in that torpor state as well. Even though their metabolism is going down, they need to refuel as soon as they wake up. And it takes them a little bit of time to wake up from the semi-hibernative state, anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour to fully recover from the torpor. And then they need to hit a feeder, which is something that helps them is having access to a hummingbird feeder in freezing temperatures. Make sure you have a hummingbird feeder open for the hummingbirds early in the morning.
Just to get them on the way.
It's like having their coffee at the drive-thru.
Chris, thank you for sharing this magical bird with us. Thank you so much, Christy. I can't look up at a hummingbird without just seeing the magic. It's quite amazing.
Excellent. Yep.
We'll look forward to the next time you're with us. Our mystery sound today, you may have gotten this one, it is the great horned owl. This is a big bird. It's a formidable predator. The great horned owl lives everywhere in North America. It is said to be common, but I had never seen one until this week. It landed on the grassy drain field outside my house just at dusk, hunting in the grass. And then it climbed to the top of a snag and watched. They have brilliant, staring gold eyes, and you see tufts of feather on top of their head, which people imagine are ears, but I think they're decorative. And in size and strength, this is an amazing owl. It is nearly 2 feet tall. It can catch prey larger than itself, but it also lives on small mammals and birds. The eyes don't move. The head can rotate 180 degrees, and I was watching this bird do this. You're looking at a bird, and you see the glimmer of the eyes, and then the face disappears and turns to feathers. This must help the bird camouflage itself against a tree. Nesting and raising fledglings usually happens in late February or early March. it's a year-round resident here, and it has been described as the quintessential owl of storybooks. Certainly, its presence offers a dramatic and memorable vision. That is our show for today, and thanks for joining us on Nature Now. KPTZ serves the community in times of change when new information arrives daily, and we certainly need a local radio station. Nature Now is on Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 5:05, and Saturdays at 12:30. Thanks to Alex. This is a two-way telephone call, three, I guess, because he's in the station, and I'm on the edge of Port Ludlow, and Christy is over in Gardner, and we've all managed to make it work. So our song today is Leonard Cohen's Bird on a Wire. Thank you for listening.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Like the worm like a night from some old-fashioned book, I have saved all my ribbons for thee. If I have been that you can just let it go by. If I have been untrue, I hope you know it was never to you. A beast with his horn, I have torn everyone who reached out for me. But I swear by this song and by all that I have done wrong, I will not ask for so much. And a pretty woman leaning in her darkened door, she cried to me, hey, why not ask for more? Oh, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free.